Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Yud Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 8 lines from the bottom of Daf Yud Dalid with a quote from the Mishnah, Ha'omer li'ishtoi, harei at olai ki'imo. A man says to his wife, you are unto me like my mother. Poison lo pesach, he has to seek absolution of this vow from a Torah sage, from a chacham. The Gemara asks, a contradiction. Verominu, hare atolai, a man says to his wife, you are unto me, kibasar imo, like the flesh of my mother. These are all expressions of prohibition, where he is saying that you are unto me, like one's mother, of course, is prohibited to a son, kibasar achosi, you are unto me, like my sister, keorlo, ukikile akarim. Different types of rules or laws of crop prohibition. Orla is fruit within the first 3 years of its growth, and Kila Kerem is mixed breeding of grains in a vineyard. In all of these expressions, he's saying that his wife is considered unto himself like any of these things. Loi Omar Klum. The result is nothing has been said. And by concluding that, we're saying you don't even have to go to a sage. You don't need to seek absolution of a vow that doesn't exist. So why in our Mishnah do we see the opposite? Namely that when one says to his wife that you are unto me like my mother, you have to seek absolution, indicating that some level of vow has taken hold. Omar Abaye. So Abaye explains, Lo Omar Klum, this Tanaic source which says nothing has been accomplished, there is no vow whatsoever. Midoraisa, that's on a Torah level. Vitzorach She'en Lo Midorabonan. On a rabbinic level, there is the need for seeking absolution. So Rashi points out that the reason on a Torah level nothing has taken hold is because in all of the cases he says regarding his wife that she is to be unto him like his mother, like his sister, like Orloki, like him. These are things that are usur anyway from the Torah. And in vow formulation, you have to parallel the subject of vow to something that a person made prohibited, not that was pre-forbidden by the Torah. So that's on a Torah level. However, we say to a person, you should be careful in your speech. Don't be so glib and prone to vow making. Therefore, we impose on him a little bit of hardship. He has to trouble himself to seek absolution by a sage. Rava Omar. Rava has a different approach. We have two sources. We have our Mishnah that seems to indicate the need for seeking absolution, and the second Tanaic source which says no need. So Rava resolves the two sources with the following point, which continues to the bottom line. Rava Omar, ha b'talmidei chachomim, ha ba'am ha'aretz. If you're dealing with a Torah scholar, a Torah sage, he doesn't need to seek absolution. True, he said something that he shouldn't have said. It's not proper to utter terms that sound like vows, even if they're not actual vows. But it was a one-time thing. He's not prone to it. He's a Talmud Chacham. He's a Torah sage. And part of being a legitimate Torah sage is the characteristic or having developed a character where one is, generally speaking, quite careful with one's speech. Therefore, okay, a one-time slip, we don't need to impose hardships upon him. He doesn't, as we say, he doesn't need to be taught a lesson. However, when you're dealing with ignoramuses, that's almost the daily type of speech that they practice, we want to educate them and impose difficulties upon that type of speech. And if one would go so far as to say that to his wife, that she's unto him like his mother, so we want him to learn a lesson and seek absolution. Once again, not because there is an actual vow, but more on a, we'll call it a Derech Eretz level, on a proper proper lifestyle and proper etiquette. For Tanya, and we cite a source in support of this. The Votanya, the Ran, points out this is a source of support. Even though the word Votanya generally presents a question, here it's Benichusa. Hanoider betoiro lo omar klum. Viomar Rabbi Yochanan v'tzorch she'elo l'chocham. Viomar Rav Nachman v'talmud chocham eino tzorch she'elo. The person vows in the Torah. So that doesn't have any vow meaning. It doesn't have any it doesn't conform to the standards of actual vow text. Therefore, on a technical basis, he has said nothing. But Rabbi Yochanan says if a person blurts that out, he's no derbatori, vows in the Torah, whatever he wants to vow in, whatever he wants to restrict. Rabbi Yochanan says he has to seek absolution by a Torah sage. And Rav Nachman says that if it's a Talmud Chacham that happened to say that, he doesn't need the absolution. And this reflects what Rava said before, that when it comes to a Talmud Chacham, we don't require absolution. However, when it comes to an Am Haaretz, there we do. We now continue at the top of Amud Beis. This is a new discussion. It's true that we're going to actually see the same quote we just now saw three lines from the bottom of Amud Aleph, but we have a new discussion. Tanya. On the side, we present a rather abbreviated topic heading, Hanodir B'Torah. There's a chart that you can see we've included on the side of the Gemara as well. It might be worth looking at the chart even before we go into the Gemara itself to give an overview. This chart, we also indicate, isn't here to have the various sections of the grid filled in, but rather it's simply to set up the different factors or variables in presenting the sugya. So you have a person making a neder. So we have here on the chart Divrei Hanoder in the upper corner of the chart, the speaker, what he says. Bo is a reference to someone who vows in the Torah. He might vow Bameh Shekosev Bo. He vows in that which is written in the Torah. Or Bo uva mashikosav ba. He says, I vow in the Torah and that which is written in the Torah. And by the way, we have to emphasize a point that you can see in the Ran, that Hanodir B'Torah is really someone who is being nishba. We've made this distinction along the way between a shivua and a neder, but from time to time the difference is vague. and the words are used interchangeably. So that here, the text reads as he's no debato, but rather, in truth, he's nishba. He's swearing in the Torah. Now, there are two more factors. We just presented to you the different texts the man might use. Then there are two situations regarding the Torah scroll itself. And that you can see down the side of the chart, Muna Ha'ara. You have a person walking along and encounters what appears to be a Torah scroll lying on the ground. And you have a situation of Nokit Biode. He's holding it in his arms. Now, having said all of that, we turn to the Gemara. Tanya, Hanoide B'Torah Lo Amar Klum. B'Mashikosuv Bo Devorav Kayomin. If he swears in that which is written in the Torah, when he said, what's written in the Torah? It's like God's name. So it's like swearing in God's name. So that's Devorav Kayomin. So that's binding. Bo uvameshe kosuv bo. He swears in the Torah and that which is written in the Torah, Dvorav Kayomen, so his words are binding. Kotoni, in this source it said, Bameshe kosuv bo Dvorav Kayomen. That we saw, point number two. A person swears in that which is written in the Torah, as we said, he swears in the name of God, which is something that's written in the Torah, so it's a binding. Oath. Bal v'mashikosu b'tzorach l'meimar. Section 3 of this source, does that need to be taught? That's obvious. You're saying in the Torah and that. I'm swearing in the Torah and that which is written in the Torah. That's obvious. Omer Rav Nachman lo kashya. Rav Nachman says, no, there isn't anything extraneous in this source. It all depends on the circumstances. Ha demachta iraisa aro. Case 3 involves a situation where a Torah scroll is lying on the floor. Ha denokit biyode. Section 2 is dealing with a case of a person that's holding a Torah scroll. Mochta a'ara, if a Torah scroll is lying on the floor, it would not be enough for him to use the expression Bameshe Kosev Bo, because that would imply Daite Agvili. A Torah scroll that's lying on the floor gives the impression that really nothing's been written in there, because if it was a Torah scroll with writing in it, wow, how could someone leave that lying on the floor? So that if he were to say simply regarding walking by a Torah scroll lying on the floor, and he says he swears and he's nishba b'mashikosuba, or he's nishba batorah, it must be that he's nishba, he's swearing in the parchment of the Torah, and that has no meaning. Therefore, in order for us to, let's say, gain clarity in what the person's intent is, only if he were to say regarding a case of a Torah scroll lying on the floor, he would say, I'm swearing in the Torah and that which is written in the Torah, then we see that he's not referring to the Gvili, he's not referring just to the parchment. He's spelling out, he's being quite clear, he's clarifying what his oath is based on. However, if it's nokit b'lo b'yode, a Torah scroll that he's holding in his arms, or that's being held, then you don't have to spell out all of that. Daite alo askoro shebo. If he were to say that he swears b'meshe kosev bo regarding a Torah scroll that's being held, so his reference there is to the askoros. The askoros means to the name of the Almighty that's written in the Torah. So that cases 2 and 3 are referring to simply two different circumstances. V'iboyasemo demachto al ara. Another approach, a totally different approach, is that the source is dealing with a Torah scroll lying on the floor, v'hoka mashmalan. And the following is the intent of the source, the afagav demachto al ara. Even though it's lying on the floor, kevan diomar b'meshikosuv bo. Once he says that phrase, that he's nishba b'meshikosuv bo, mehani, it's effective. Vizu v'ein tzorach lomar, v'ein tzorach lomar zukotani. And the structure of the source is this, namely zu, case 2, or phrase 2, is an effective oath. If he says b'mashikosubo, that's effective. And it goes without saying that that phrase 3 would be all the more effective. That's certainly effective, and I don't have to tell you that. If I tell you that by saying b'mesh kosev ba, that's an effective oath, all the more so if he were to say ba uva mesh kosev ba. That's an accepted, called Tanaic structure of, I'm telling you this, and I don't have to tell you this. V'boyesema, another approach to the source, kula nami denokit lay biyode. The whole source is dealing with a scroll being held. The ho komashmalon, and the following is the intent of this source. Kevan denokit lay biyode, since it's a Torah scroll that's being held, af agav delo omar elo bo, even though he said only bo, meaning I'm swearing in the Torah, Kiman di Omar b'mashikos of Bodomi. As we approach the new Mishnah, we're going to have to tell you ahead of time that the content of the Mishnah will be more easily understood by the examples that we will see in the Gemara. So, we're not going to focus too much on the translation of the Mishnah per se. Before we go into the Mishnah, we'll also point out that we'll have a series of markings that we'll want to discuss as soon as we begin the Gemara. So in the meantime, the Mishnah reads, Koinam Shani Yoshein. Koinam is an expression of a vow, like a korban. Something is being prohibited if he goes to sleep, or shani medaber, or if he speaks, shani mahalech, or if he walks. Ha'im relisha koinim shani meshamshech, or he says to his wife, imposing as a prohibition something, an item, if he engages in intimacy with her. Hareze belo yachel dvaro. This expression indicates that something has taken hold. All we did up to this point is translate without any commitment to any final understanding. Itmar. Koinom einai b'shino hayoim im ishan lomochar. He imposes a vow upon his eyes, if they go to sleep today, if he sleeps tomorrow. So that would mean, just taking things on a rather, let's say, objective or basic level, this person is saying that he will be in violation of a vow for his sleep that he does today if he sleeps tomorrow. So there's a basic vow, and throughout the sugya, the basic vow will be highlighted with a triangle with the point facing up. So there's a basic vow. There is something that will be subject to a negative command, a violation of a negative command, if a certain condition is met. That's called the Tanai. The Tanai is highlighted with a with an inverted triangle as we go through the sugya. So that he will... The question right now is he allowed to sleep today? Is sleeping today a problem for this gentleman? Well, we can agree it will certainly be a problem for this gentleman if he sleeps tomorrow. That was the condition that he stated. But is sleeping today objectively prohibited? No. It will be a problem, we'll say retroactively, if he sleeps tomorrow. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav, Al Yishan Hayom. Rav Yehuda is cautious. He is fearful. He does not take any chances. We tell the person, don't sleep today. Shema Yishan Lamahar. You might fall asleep tomorrow. You might, we'll say, activate the condition. I'm not sure if I can use the term violate the condition, but rather you'll activate the condition that will retroactively make sleeping today a problem, a violation of a vow. Rav Nachman Omar, Yishan Hayom. Rav Nachman says, this guy, let him sleep today. We're not afraid. If he sleeps today, he'll be very careful. V'lo chayshin on shemo yishan lemochar. And we're not suspicious, we're not fearful of his violating the condition or activating the condition the next day. Umoide Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda, who we just saw had been cautious, he will concede Bi'oimer Kainim Einai Bashino Lamochar, where a person imposes a vow upon his sleep tomorrow. That's the, we'll call it the basic vow, will affect his sleep tomorrow. Im Yishan Hayom, if he sleeps today. So this person will, in this scenario, when will a problem arise? Well, a problem would arise if he sleeps today and also sleeps tomorrow. And how is that? Is the sleep tomorrow a problem? Well, it would be a problem if he sleeps today. There you've got the tonight, the condition. The condition is stated with regard to today's sleep. So we're activating the potential for the vow violation if he sleeps today. The actual vow is with regard to tomorrow's sleep. Well, in a case like this, what does Rav Yehuda say? He concedes, here I'm not worried. Shishan Hayom, let him sleep today. Today's sleep is not the actual vow. It's the tnai. It's the catalyst, the activator. We let him sleep today. The Gemara continues at the top of Tes Vav Amud Aleph, and with the explanation why Rav Yehuda here is relaxed, why he is not restrictive. Ki lo mizdahir. When is it that people are not careful? Bitno. When it comes to the condition, the stipulation, the catalyst element, avo bi isura mizdahir. But when it comes to the actual vow, there people are careful. So that in this scenario of someone banning sleep from his eyes tomorrow, when that tomorrow comes, he will be very careful. If he had slept on the previous day, he will be very careful. He'll go to all ends to stay awake. And hence, Rebuta is not worried about that. This is in contrast to the first case where the actual vow was with regard to the sleep of today, if he sleeps tomorrow. Can we take a chance with this guy? Can we say, would Rebuta say here, oh, go to sleep today? No. Here he's not going to say, he's not going to be so light and free with the fellow saying, go to sleep today. Why? Because tomorrow's, we'll say, sleep restriction isn't a function of the actual vow, but it's a function of the catalyst, the tanai aspect. And people aren't so careful with that. And if he were to sleep today and also sleep tomorrow, he'll be in trouble. So there, Rabbi Yehuda exercises precaution. We've basically presented the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Nachman. For us to continue in the sukya, it is a benefit to remember that Rabbi Yehuda, when it comes to tanais, is restrictive, and when it comes to Rav Nachman, not so. We're not going to continue with the discussion. It's a rather long discussion that will take us till Daf Tes Vav Amud Beis, but you can see with the markings just by scanning ahead, you notice there are diamonds that appear, and this diamond scheme will continue to Daf Tes Vav Amud Beis. All of these diamonds are essentially questions raised against Rabbi Yehuda, where from a number of sources, at first glance, it seems that we allow a person to do an action that will result in being problematic if he violates a catalyst, if he violates a tnai, if he violates a stipulation, showing us that we'll rely on a person to be careful not to violate the stipulation or the condition, because we're not worried about people being lax with tenoyim, with tenais. All of that would represent, and all of these diamonds will represent questions, challenges to Rav Yehuda's restrictive approach. Mir Tzashem, when we get to our next year, we're going to be relying on this introduction so as to be able to get right into the discussion next time. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.